solar system, thousands of billions of tons of water. Water. What would Selene and the other lunar cities pay for an unending supply of water? What would the miners and prospectors in the asteroid belt pay? More than gold, more than diamonds and pearls, water is the most precious resource in the solar system, and we have control of enough water to make us all richer than Croesus. No! Nadia Wonderly screamed, leaping to her feet from the middle of the audience. You can't! You mustn't! Saturn arrival minus 3 days, 3 hours, 11 minutes. Eberly saw a stumpy, slightly plump woman with spiky red hair pushing her way to the front of the crowd.
You can't siphon off the ring particles,
she shouted as the people moved away to clear a path for her.
You'll ruin the rings. You'll destroy them.
Holding up a hand for silence, Eberly said dryly, It seems we've reached the question and answer part of this evening's rally. Once she got to the front of the crowd, at the edge of the platform, Wonderly hesitated. Suddenly she looked embarrassed, unsure of herself. She glanced around, her cheeks reddening. Eberly smiled down at her. If the other candidates don't mind, I'd like to invite this young woman up here to the podium to state her views. The audience applauded. Lukewarm, but applause nonetheless. Eberly glanced at Urbain and Timoshenko sitting behind him. Urbain looked uncertain, almost confused. Timoshenko sat with his arms crossed over his chest, an expression somewhere between boredom and disgust on his dark face. Come on up, Eberly beckoned. Come up here and state your views so that everyone can hear. Wonderly hung back for a couple of heartbeats. Then, her lips set in a determined, grim line, she climbed the platform stairs and strode to the podium. As Eberly clipped a spare microphone to the lapel of her tunic, she said earnestly, You can't mind the rings. Eberly stopped her with a single upraised finger. Just a moment. Tell us your name first, if you please, and your affiliation. She swallowed once, then looked out at the audience and said,
Dr. Nadia Wonderly, I'm with the Planetary Sciences Group.
A scientist? I thought so, Eberly said to himself. Here's my chance to show the voters how self-centered the scientists are, how righteous they are, not caring an iota about the rest of us.
That's right. I'm a planetary scientist, and you can't start mining the rings. You'll destroy them. I know they look big, but if you put all of the ring particles together, they'd only form a body of ice that's no more than 100 kilometers across.
Turning to Urbain, Eberly said, Would you care to join this discussion, Dr. Urbain? The Quebecois got up from his chair and approached the platform, while Timoshenko sat unmoving, his arms still folded across his chest, his face still scowling.
The rings are fragile, Wonderly said earnestly. If you start stealing tons of particles from them, you might break them up.
Eberly asked, Dr. Urbain, is that true? Urbain's face clouded momentarily. Then, with a little tug at his beard, he replied, Yes, of course. If you continue to remove particles from the rings, at some point you will destabilize them. That is obvious. How many tons of ice particles can we remove without destabilizing the rings? Urbain looked at Wonderly, then gave a Gallic shrug. That is unknown.
I could calculate it, Wonderly said.
How many tons of ice are there in the rings? Eberly probed. Before Urbain could answer, Wonderly said,
A little over 5 × 10⁻⁷ metric tons.
5 times? Eberly made a puzzled face. That sounds like a lot to me. Urbain said, It is 5 with 17 zeros after it.
500,000,000,000,000 tons, said Wonderly.
Eberly pretended to be amazed. And you're worried about our snitching a few hundred tons per year? A few snickering laughs rose from the crowd.
But we don't know what effect that would have on the ring dynamics, Wonderly said, almost pleading.
Urbain added more forcefully, You say a few hundred tons per year, but that number will grow.
Yes, but there's 500,000,000,000 tons available, said Eberly.
Nostrils flaring, Urbain said, And once all of Canada was covered with trees. Where are they now? Once the oceans of Earth were filled with fish. Now even the plankton are dying. Once the jungles of Africa were home to the great apes. Today the only chimpanzees or gorillas in existence live in zoos. Turning to the audience, Eberle said in his strongest, most authoritative voice, "You can see why scientists must not be allowed to run this habitat. They care more for apes than they do for people. They want to keep 500 million, million tons of water ice out of our hands when just a tiny amount of that water could make all of us wealthy." Wonderly burst,
"But we don't know enough about the rings. At some point, you could upset the ring dynamics so badly that they'll all go crashing down into the planet."
"And what would happen to any organisms living beneath the clouds?" Urbane added. "It would be an environmental catastrophe beyond imagining. Planetary genocide." Eberle shook his head. "By taking 100 tons or so out of the 500 million million.
"Yes," Urbane snapped. "I will not allow it. The International Astronautical Authority will not allow it."
"And how will they stop us?" Eberle snapped back. "We're an independent entity. We don't have to follow the dictates of the IAA or any other earthbound authority." Turning again to the audience, he said, "I will establish our government as independent of all earthbound restrictions, just like Selene, just like the mining communities in the asteroid belt. We will be our own masters. I promise you." The audience roared its approval. Urbane shook his head in bafflement. Tears sprang to Wonderly's eyes. Professor Wilmot's quarters. Instead of his usual evening's entertainment, Wilmot watched the final rally. "Eberle's a rabble-rouser, nothing less," he thought. "Mining the rings and making everyone rich. What an extraordinary idea. Ecologically unwise, perhaps, but the short-term gains will wipe out any fears of long-term problems. The scientists are unhappy, of course, but what can they do? Eberle's got this election sewed up. Timoshenko's people will vote their pocketbooks and go for Eberle. So will a good many of the scientists, I wager." He leaned back in his comfortable, upholstered chair and watched the crowd boil up onto the platform and carry Eberle off on their shoulders, leaving Urbane, Timoshenko, and that pathetic little red-haired woman standing there like forlorn children.
Holly knew there was no exit from the utilities tunnel that opened directly into the apartment building where Professor Wilmot lived. Since she'd gone into hiding, she'd been able to sneak into office buildings in the dead of night and use their laboratory facilities. She had even gone clothes shopping in the main warehouse without being detected. But now she would have to risk coming up in the village and scurrying along the streets of Athens in full view of the surveillance cameras atop the light poles. "How can I do that without being seen?" she asked herself as she made her way along the tunnel. "I need a disguise." Or a diversion, she realized. She stopped and sat on the floor, thinking hard.
Tavalera walked for kilometers along the main utility tunnel running from Athens out under the orchards and farms and all the way to the end cap. No sign of Holly. He passed a sturdy little maintenance robot, swiveling back and forth across a small patch of the metal flooring, its vacuum cleaner buzzing angrily. Tavalera stopped and watched the squat, square-shaped robot. From his weeks spent with the maintenance department, Tavalera knew that the robots patrol these tunnels, programmed to clean any dust or leaks they found, or to call for human help if they came across something beyond their limited means of handling. There was some kind of crud at this one spot, Tavalera reasoned. He couldn't see any dirt or an oil smear. Could it have been crumbs? Could Holly have been eating here? He looked up and down the tunnel. The robot, satisfied that the area was now clean, trundled off toward the end cap, deftly maneuvering around Tavalera, its sensors alert for anything amiss. "Holly!" Tavalera yelled, hoping she was close enough to hear him. No answer, except the echo of his own voice bouncing down the tunnel.
Sitting side by side, Cardenas and